The future belongs to those who control the culture, and the culture belongs to those who control the conversation. So we are having the conversations you wish you could have at church to build a safe and vibrant community. This is the Oz Table Talk Podcast. Hey everyone, and welcome to the Oz Table Talk Podcast. Today I'm going to be interviewing Neville Peter, and if you don't know who that is, Neville is a singer-songwriter from the US, and he's written over 100 songs. He's played Carnegie Hall, he's played the White House, he's done a lot of really amazing things, but most of all, he has changed people's lives with his music. The reason I had the opportunity to talk to him was because my local church invited him to do a concert. So in the process of doing so, I asked him if he would have the time, and he was very obliging. He was happy to sit down and have a chat. So he was staying with a friend of mine, Andres. Shout out to you, Andres. And we were able to go to his place and sit down and just hang out for a bit. And we really enjoyed having a chat. Now, in this conversation, we talk about a lot of different things. We talk about his blindness and how that affects his life and what his walk with the Lord has been like. And we talk about his songwriting process and lots of other things. So it doesn't matter whether you're a real music fan or not, this episode, I think, will have something for you. So without further ado, I'll hand over to the interview. All right, welcome to another episode of Table Talk, and my special guest today is Neville Peter, and so welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So just to start us off, a lot of people may not have heard your name before, so what would you be most well known for?
Well, I am a singing evangelist, at least I like to think I am anyway. I'm a singer, a songwriter. Mm-hmm. I have a music ministry. I travel the world bringing the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ through music. Mm-hmm. Some of the music is music that I have written and composed myself, and some of it is hymns that, you know, some people know and love. And so it's a little bit of both contemporary and, I would say, you know, more traditional. I like to say that the best way to describe my music is soft, sacred, and soulful. Hmm.
That's a really nice description. In preparation for this interview, I was looking around online at a lot of the content that's out there, and I've really actually enjoyed it, because I've only been exposed to a narrower segment of your music, and now I've listened to a fair bit of it recently. I've really enjoyed it. So that's a great description.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. So where's home for you?
Home is Orlando, Florida. Mm-hmm. That's where I currently live with my wife and little guy, who is 7 years old. His name is Neville Jr. Of course, it's not always easy to travel and be away from them. So I have to connect with them every day, of course. And I had my fix this morning already. But yeah, that's home for me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's great. So just to start us off, I'd like to hit the rewind and go back into your experience a little bit. So did you grow up in a Christian home?
Yes, I did. I grew up, both of my parents were Christian, and we were very routine in that we had family devotion every morning and every evening, and went to church every Sabbath, and it was quite, you know, a traditional Christian home. But you know how it goes, you know, when you get to be a teenager and you begin to be distracted by the things of the world, you know, and you get distracted by the opposite sex, and you just, mm-hmm. you know, you just begin to be enticed away from God. That was pretty much my story. The Lord did real number on me in bringing me back, but before he did that, you know, unfortunately, I had an opportunity to experience things that, well, that I wish I hadn't. But the Lord is good, you know. He brought me back to himself, and I'm really grateful for that. I started off singing in church when I was about 5 or 6 years old, and I discovered that I had a voice during the congregational singing. And so, you know, it was a lot of fun for me. So I would sing really loud. And, you know, the story was that you can hear me above everything, the piano and the congregation. And, you know, my friends at the time began to tease. So I decided I wasn't going to sing again. I decided that I would just kind of keep it to myself or just not sing at all. And then when I was about 16, I discovered my voice again at a Christmas concert. And the reaction from my friends was a lot different. And once I realized that people really enjoyed it and that it was something that I enjoyed, I decided to make a career of it.
So when you were invited to sing at that concert, what made you decide that, you know, after this intermediary time of not doing much with your voice, what made you decide that you were going to actually perform when you were 16 then?
That's interesting. I'm not completely certain what. I was in high school, like I said at the time, and it was a musical program put on by the music school. I was still very interested in music, and I was playing the piano for the choir. So I was the pianist for the choir, and somehow they were doling out solos, and the teacher decided that I would be best to do this particular solo, and I didn't turn it down. I just decided that I would do it, and then once I did it, I got a standing ovation.
That must have been quite an experience, because it's one thing to you know, perform and know what the response is going to be, but when you don't know what the response is going to be and it turns out to be very positive, that must have been a very powerful experience.
Yeah, it was cool. Mm. And again, you know, when I realized how different the reaction of my peers was, you know, in my teenage years, you know, I realized right away that I could make a career of this. And then also, you know, when you're a teenager, you're trying to find yourself and you're trying to figure out what your purpose is. And then being blind on top of that, you know, you want to find ways that you can belong. And so it sort of answered all of those questions for me.
Yeah. So you mentioned the fact that you're blind. At what point in narrative does that happen? When did that happen?
Well, I'll have to back up to before I was even a year old. When I was about 6 weeks old, my parents got into a very bad car accident, and I hit my head, and so they took me to the hospital to see if everything was okay. They tested me, and I had all my reflexes, and so they told my parents that I was fine, and my parents took me home. Well, about 6 months later, my parents noticed that I was not making eye contact with them anymore, that I was not responding, you know, as a baby would when, you know, your parents smile and all of that. So they took me back to the hospital, and they ran more tests, and they discovered that I had glaucoma. Now, glaucoma is something that affects older people. It can affect younger children too, but it's very rare. It's usually something that's hereditary, but the anomaly is that nobody in my family, either on my mother's side or my father's side, had glaucoma. So the theory is that I got it from the car accident when I hit my head. So I was taken to a lot of different hospitals to get treatment for it. In those days, the 70s, there was no cure for glaucoma. So the only way you could treat it pretty much was to relieve the pressure that would build up in your eyes. And so this went on for years and years until I was about somewhere between 11 and 12 years old when I lost my sight completely.
Was that like when you did lose it completely? Was that sudden, that you wake up one day and it's not there, or
no? Because glaucoma, glaucoma is a very very gradual. The pain isn't gradual; it's a very painful disease. But as far as the losing your vision part of it, it's very gradual, so it's almost imperceptible. I remember seeing. I just don't remember seeing perfectly. But I do remember seeing, when I started school, I had to use a magnifying glass and I had to wear thick glasses. But I remember actually being glad that I couldn't see anymore, because then I didn't need the glasses. So, yeah, it's a very slow kind of thing. So it wasn't like I woke up one morning and my vision is gone. It just progressively kept getting worse and worse, and which actually turned out to be a real blessing, because I was privileged to learn Braille before I actually lost my sight.
Oh, okay. That would have made the process an easier transition.
Yes, it was a very easy transition. Mm. The social side of it wasn't as easy, but the physical side of it was actually quite easy.
Mm. So as far as the social side of it, was that the hardest part to adjust to?
I would say yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that most people who don't have a disability have a hard time realizing that those of us who do have disabilities struggle more with the social aspect of it than the physical aspect of it. Mm. And the reason is that, you know, we are adaptable creatures. We can, you know, we're very quick. God made us so that we can adapt to our environment very quickly. Mm. So that's what makes the physical aspect of it a lot easier. But then the social part of it is a little different, because then all of a sudden, instead of being a person, you are a person with a disability. And that, you know, has all kinds of, you know, effects, you know, that both parties are not really prepared to deal with, I believe.
So interesting. I find it interesting because you obviously found your way into the music profession. And we talked about, you know, your experience when you were 16. That seems to be a profession that requires a degree of confidence. How did you acquire that confidence, or do you were there any particular experiences, or did your parents foster that in some way so that you felt comfortable just to say, yeah, I'm still going to get out there and I'm going to do this?
Oh, that's a really good question. My parents at home didn't treat me any different, other than the fact that I had to be taken to the hospital occasionally for treatment. So, you know, I was mischievous just like other children, and I got punished in the same way like other children. You know what I'm saying?
I mean,
and I think that really was it, that because when I went to school, I was treated differently, and there were different expectations of me than the other kids. But at home, my parents didn't treat me any differently than my other brothers. And I believe that's perhaps where the confidence came from.
That's probably a good model. I'll frame that as a question. Do you think that's a good model for people in general when they're relating to people who are different in whatever the way that may be, just to treat them normally? Is that the most healthy?
Yeah, I would say aspect? So. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm. Yeah. I mean, like I remember I was playing in a band, and we went out to eat before we did our show, and the guy at the counter asked one of my bandmates, what does he want? You know, as if I couldn't speak for myself. So I spoke up and I said, I can speak for myself. Just tell me what you have and I'll tell you what I want. Well, he was offended. He thought that I was being rude. And he said so. You know, he was very, you know, very, very, I guess, transparent about the way he felt, you know, like I shouldn't have been speaking up for myself. I should know my place and let others speak for me. So those are the kind of things I'm kind of talking about. Yeah. You know, I think that generally, you know, people who don't have disabilities need to realize that most of us who do have disabilities want to maintain our autonomy.
Yeah. Yeah, makes perfect sense. That's basically what we all want, that, right?
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
So
exactly.
Why would anybody be any different? So it makes good sense. So I was in preparation for this, I was listening to your testimony online, and in that I heard you talking about your experience, you know, with your parents, particularly your mother, praying for you to regain your sight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Looking back on that,
How do you think about that now, both personally for you, but also generally? What do you see as your theology around how God heals people and when He heals them?
I believe that the Word of God is powerful, and that whatever God says happens. So, you know, if God wants me to be healed, I could be healed right now. But I also believed that, you know, that there are times when God uses the weak things of the world to confound the strong things of the world. And we have to know the difference, you know. You know, it's all about God's glory. So if God can get glory from healing someone, me in that case, then He'll do it. But if God can get more glory from choosing a weak vessel, which would be me again in that case, then that's fine too. And that's really how faith works. Because, you know, if we understood everything about the way God deals with people and life and circumstances and our challenges in particular, then there would really be no need for faith, because we would have things all figured out. So, you know, in our walk with God, faith is absolutely necessary, because His ways are much higher than our ways, and we have to learn to trust. So that's really where I'm at right now. It's all about trusting that whatever God decides for me is best. So, you know, relating to blindness or any other challenge, you know, because there are other challenges that we face and we wonder, well, why didn't God do this or why didn't He do that? He obviously could have. Well, you know, maybe there's something that God sees down the road that we don't see, or maybe there's something that would be best for our own good if we remain the way we are. I mean, the best example I could think of is Moses, for instance. Now, Moses was punished by God because he didn't, according to God, he didn't sanctify him in front of the people, or he wasn't obedient. Struck the rock twice. Right, right. But the ironic thing about all of that is when Moses goes to God and pleads with God and says, God, come on, God, please, come on, let me enter. You know, God said, don't ask me anymore, you know. And then God tells him, now go up and look at the land that you were supposed to enter, but you can't enter. So Moses goes up on the mountain and looks at the land that he can't enter and dies on top of the mountain. And then God gives him something way better, so much more, so much better than the promised land. You know, so this is how we need to look at things, that, you know, God, most of the time, if not all the time, wants to give us something better for ourselves than we even want, you know, yeah. But that requires trust.
Yeah. That is so true. That is so true. I love that aspect to it, because there are so many people that I've spoken to who, you know, for whatever the reason, I mean, obviously different people have different struggles in their life, but when that God doesn't answer them the way they think He should answer them, a lot of people use that as a reason to give up hope or to be bitter towards God. But just the way you articulated that is so beautiful. I think if we understood that better, we would be much more likely to be the ones that are bringing God the glory that he intended us to, you know what I mean? So yeah. That's wonderful.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. It was a struggle for my parents, particularly my mother. Hmm. And my mother, would say from time, you're going to see again. And you know, the strange thing is that I have two friends since then who have told me the same thing. So I don't know if they're prophesying or what, but I met when I was kind of out there in the world, I met an older lady who befriended me, and she said the same thing to me, and she passed away. And I just recently made friends with another guy who said the same thing to me not too long ago.
Wow.
So
interesting.
I don't it's definitely not high on my priority list, like, you know, because I'm pretty happy the way I am. But hey, if God wants to,
you're not going to turn it down.
If he wants to turn the lights on, that'll be fine.
Yeah. So I was just thinking as you were speaking before, because obviously when you were saying how quickly humans adapt, God made us that way. And often when we are lacking in one way, then something else develops, right? So in your particular case, what advantages do you have, either by skill or by experience or by how you perceive the world? What advantages do you think you have that sighted people might not have?
Well, I would say that I, as a blind person, I have to pay very close attention to all the information that comes in through my senses. It seemed to me like sighted people tend to take for granted their sight. Whereas with me, you know, I have to rely on all my senses to know what's going on around me. And that's one of the reasons why I think a lot of sighted people have this myth that they say, well, if you're blind, your other senses get stronger. But it's not really true. You just have to pay attention. You don't hear better. You just have to listen more. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I would say that's probably one of the greatest advantages. I have to be keenly aware of my environment, keenly aware of my, you know, of my surroundings. And then I can't speak for other blind people, but for me, I try to be very perceptive about who I'm dealing with and what kind of person they are and what to expect from certain people. And I think that has helped me a lot in my dealings with people. It's just been a real blessing for me. But other than that, I wouldn't say that I have any more advantages than anyone else. At least if I do, I can't think of any at the moment.
Yeah, no, that's fine. So just to pick up the narrative of your story, where did, you know, for you, where do you feel that you're, because you mentioned that you you left the church for a time, where was your conversion experience after that? What did that look like?
Well, it was a process. It wasn't something that, like, night and day, and then all of a sudden I'm ready for translation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were several things that happened that began my road back to God. And one of the first things was that I met a young lady in college who was a devout at Seventh-day Adventist Christian, you know, and she was extremely attractive.
Mm.
And somehow I knew that.
that's my next question. How did you know?
Somehow I knew that.
Mm.
And I was a worldly person. So, yeah. You know, I had worldly, you know, well, I don't really know if you could, well, if you're a guy, you can identify with what I'm going to say. You know, my intentions were not spiritual.
Love the honesty. That's what this podcast is about. We appreciate it.
I decided that my pickup line was going to be something like, let's go to church or something like that, you know? And so, she began taking me to church, and every Sabbath, you know, I would hear something, and it wouldn't matter where I was the night before, what I had been doing the night before. I would always go to church with her and would always feel drawn. I guess it was kind of God's way of reminding me of where I came from. And years went by, and now I'm out of college. This young lady also was out of college and just kind of living in the city of Miami, where we went to school. And she kept taking me to church. And then one Sabbath, they asked me if I could sing, because at that point, the church that I was going to regularly with this young lady knew that I had some musical abilities. So they asked me if I would sing the appeal song. And so I agreed to it. Well, the person that they had speaking was also a student of the university where I had attended, but he was in the medical school, and he was one of the elders there, and he liked to speak. You know, he still does occasionally, likes to speak about the entertainment industry and different aspects of it. So unfortunately, he began to talk about that, and he just began to call everything out, you know. And here I am, actually a participant in the music industry, sitting ready to sing the appeal song. And and so he gets done, and I go to sing the appeal song, and it was like the Spirit of God began moving on my heart and impressing me very strongly to accept the appeal. And, you know, being in the flesh, you know, how we resist God, my reasoning was, well, I'm already at the front. I'm pretty close to the altar, so I don't need to accept the appeal because I'm already here.
Righteousness by proximity.
Yeah, something like that. Oh, I like that. Yeah. So, you know, I began to, it's funny because while I'm singing the song, there's this war going on in my mind. But I decided that I would accept the appeal. And so I like to say that God has a sense of humor because I sang the appeal song to myself and then accepted the appeal. And I was the only one that accepted the appeal that day.
Oh, wow.
And that began my journey. I mean, I can't say that it was, you know, it was like night and day and I was a new person right then. But the process began because very shortly after that, that same young lady gave me a Bible on CD. You know, so it was an audio Bible. I think it had like 66 different CDs. And it was narrated by Alexander Scurvy. And so I would listen to the Bible every morning and every evening. And gradually, you know, just things began to change. You know, I used to have a mouth like a sailor, you know, just curse, you know, like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And it's like, wow. I mean, I didn't even really notice when I stopped. I just stopped. But then there were other aspects of my life that took a little bit longer to change, you know. But yeah, so that sort of began my my experience. And another thing that sort of solidified it was somewhere around that time, Pope John Paul II visited Miami, and there was quite a big deal made about it. And I remembered something that my mother had shared with us in family worship. And what she said was, when you see Protestants and Catholics uniting, you can know that the end is near. And, you know, it was obvious to me that this was going on. You know, it wouldn't have been a big deal if it was just Catholics that were excited about it.
Yeah, but it was everybody.
Everybody. I mean, even unbelievers, non-Christians. Mm. I mean, it was a big deal. And once I saw that, it really helped me to realize that the things that I had been taught as a child are really true. And so that definitely played a big, big, big role in, you know, in my conversion experience. So I don't know if they're like parents that listen to this podcast, but I just want to encourage the parents that do, you know, to don't hold back, you know, teach your children everything they need to know. I mean, they might not get it right then and there. I didn't get it right then and there, but, you know, it'll come back. There will be times in their lives, either later in their childhood or in their teenage years or as an adult in my case, when the Lord would show them quite clearly, look, what you were told is really true. And then they're going to have to decide, well, what they're going to do with that. You know what I'm saying? And that's what happened with me. I had to come to that decision. Like, you know, what am I going to do with this? This is truth. And each of us as individuals have to decide, what are we going to do with what God has revealed? Are we going to dismiss it, or are we going to consider it, you know, or are we going to accept it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So as we go through, we're going to talk a bit more about your ministry, but just before I go there, I'm always curious to ask this question of people, and that is, who would you consider to be your greatest influences or mentors, particularly since, giving your life to Christ, and like any particular lessons that that can be drawn out of that, where those influences came from?
In terms of music or just in
either,
general?
Either spiritual or in music, whichever it may be.
Well, very shortly after I began that journey, the Lord brought a spiritual mother into my life that really made a huge impact on me, because what she would do is call me every morning for prayer, and every evening before she went to bed, I was younger, so you know how younger we had to stay up and do other things. But every evening before she went to bed, she would call me again for prayer. Sometimes she would study the Sabbath school lesson with me online. She would always, on the phone, she would always find things to share with me and was just very nurturing. So I would say first and probably foremost, it would be her in my spiritual development, because at this point I was living on my own. Yeah. I had my own place. I was living by myself, doing the bachelor thing, and my parents weren't around. Yeah. So she definitely helped me, greatly spiritually. But again, I would say, in addition to that, it would have been my parents and the foundation that they laid for me as a child. And, going back to what I was saying before with the whole, how God answers prayers, I think it's really interesting to note too that perhaps maybe being blind for me gave me an opportunity to do a little bit more considering and thinking. And as a result of that, I think that maybe I was kind of slowed down enough to consider the teachings that I was familiar with as a child, and to be able to, to bring them back into my adult life. Mm-hmm. So it would probably be my parents, and then that other spiritual mother that really helped to disciple me.
Okay. Once
the process began.
What about in your musical career? Anyone stand out to mind?
When I was pursuing my career in secular music, yeah, there were a lot of people that influenced my style. Luther Vandross. Mm-hmm. I don't know how popular he was here.
I know who you talk about. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because I realize I'm in Australia, so I. Yeah. And of course, Bobby McFerrin. Mm-hmm. People like that. Donnie Hathaway. Mm-hmm. James Ingram. Singers like that. Mm. And then of course, spending some time playing a lot of jazz as well. There were certain jazz pianists and jazz artists, Al Jarreau. Mm-hmm. And Bobby McFerrin, like I said, and yep. Ella Fitzgerald, and mm-hmm. Singers like that influence my style and mm-hmm. my approach to music.
Yeah. Yeah, and since doing gospel music, does anyone stand to mind in that area?
It's strange, not really, because as a songwriter, I tend to listen more for the lyrical content of a song and what it does for me.
Yeah,
and the strange thing is that most of the songs that move me lyrically, I don't really particularly care for the music that much.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Yeah.
So, I would say as a songwriter now, it's just, I like this song. This song has a deep and just a great message.
So it's an individual song. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I get you.
As far as singers go, there's a singer. His name is Donnie McKirklin.
Yeah, now there's a name I don't know. So.
Yeah, he's more urban African American gospel kind of a singer, but just an amazing instrument.
Yeah, cool.
His voice is just, I've always been very impressed with his singing. But as far as writing songs, you know, probably more of this Christian contemporary, maybe the CCM type stuff, mm-hmm. or maybe some of the more traditional songs. That's kind of the reason why I love hymns too, because I find that the hymns have a lot of more substance. There's a lot you can learn from a hymn as opposed to I'm talking doctrinally.
Yeah,
there's a lot you can learn doctrinally from a hymn than say some of the Christian songs that are written today.
You mentioned before, you know, being a songwriter and having that aspect on music. What does your songwriting process look like? I know it varies greatly from artist to artist. So what does songwriting look like for you?
Well, sometimes what I would do is just try to come up with a melody first. But lately I find that now I will have themes that will come to me. And I'll say, man, I want to write about this. So I want to write about that. Or I want to write about, you know, the thought process, you know, for being steadfast. Lately, I've been kind of really thinking about this idea of steadfastness. And I wrote one song called Steadfast. And now I think I want to actually do a whole album on that theme. I would say that now it's like it might be a phrase that I hear. It might be a sermon that I have listened to. And that would spark my interest and make me say, man, it'd be cool to write a song about that. And sometimes I'd be in the shower and the melody and lyric would come to me, you know. Other times I would have to sit to the piano and just work it out and develop an idea. So it comes in different ways. Sometimes the lyric comes first, but most of the time it's the music that comes first.
And like from obviously having done this for a long time now, what would you say has been the highlight of your musical career?
That's a good question. The highlight of my musical career.
Oh, you can pick a couple. It doesn't have to be a hard list.
I would say probably the first one was when I did Carnegie Hall for the first time. That was interesting.
That's a big deal.
Thought that I would do that. It was Carnegie Hall has different sections, so it was a smaller theater within Carnegie Hall, but it was quite nice. It was kind of an intimate deal, and you know, I had just never thought that doing what I do would get me there. Considering, you know, that I'm doing Christian music now and that kind of thing. But it turned out that it was a Christmas concert that was put together by a Christian entertainment corporation or something like that. I don't remember exactly what they did. They chose several artists and I happened to be one of them. So, that was cool. So that would have been one of the highlights. Another thing that I find to be wonderful is when I hear testimonies. Some years ago, I got a testimony. Somebody emailed me from the country of Rwanda. And if you know what took place in Rwanda. So I think this had happened not too long after the genocide. And the person was just letting me know what great peace that my music had brought to them. And that was a real blessing to me. I remember reading also on YouTube, somebody had left a comment after one of my songs and they were saying that they were considering suicide, you know, but after hearing that song, they began to consider, you know, their life and how important life was to them. These are the highlights I would say that mean the most to me. And I'm sure there are other events like that I'm not aware of, but those are the kind of things that mean the most to me. Because, I mean, I'm not famous or anything like that, but, you know, but I recognize that, you know, God has a purpose for each of us and for what we do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm just glad to be one of those people that he's using you know, to accomplish his goals and his.
And it's inspiring for me, and I'm assuming the people that, you know, have mentioned in your YouTube comments, and that it's inspiring for me to see that not only has God appointed you to do the work that you're doing, but you said yes. You know, you actually, you're going out and you're pursuing the work that he's asked you to do, and that, and so many people don't do that. And that's, I think that is probably one of the key aspects of having a life well lived, and that is when God gives you a ministry, gives you something to do, you do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't want to make it sound like, you know, like I just agreed to it right away, because again, like I said, for me, it was a process.
Yeah.
It was something that took years to develop, and all of us are going through various processes in our lives, and that's one of the things I love about God, is that he's patient. You know, he doesn't shine the light, all of the light in your eyes all at once, because it would blind you and you would be overwhelmed.
Yeah.
But he gives you the truth, you know, as much as you can take it, you know, and then when we receive it, we grow. And that's what I would say happened to me. Because like I said, there were a lot of challenges. When I left secular music, you know, I began volunteering as a music teacher at an Adventist school, private school, just for something to do and to just kind of get me trying to change my environment, you know.
Yeah.
And it was real difficult, you know, because those kids were, some of them were, you know, hyperactive disorder, and some of them were ADHD. It was just a really tough transition for me. And during that time, there was a lady who asked me if I would play the piano for her youth choir that she was doing. And, you know, so here I am coming from a professional music environment. Now I'm playing music for this lady's youth choir, and unfortunately the majority of her children, the kids in the choir, couldn't carry a tune. You know, it was rough.
That would be really discouraging.
You know, like it was. I'm telling you, it was very discouraging.
Did you start to feel like, you know, are there, you know, can I actually be a professional and a Christian at the same time? Like, was that a...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a struggle. But, you know, it's funny because around that time was when the song Be Thou Faithful Unto Death was written. You know, I felt like the Lord was just saying, hang in there, you know, I'm going to see you through this. And then around that time, too, was when I read about Moses and help and daily living. And it was where she was discussing the fact that Moses, even though he was first in line to be the Pharaoh, and how he had prominence and he left all of that and went out into the desert, and into Midian to lead sheep. And God was actually teaching him and training him for his greater purpose. And I remember reading that and just feeling very encouraged, you know, by that. You know, all of a sudden, it wasn't too difficult to deal with, you know, being a teacher. And it was cool because the school hired me. And so I actually became their official music teacher. And then I still kept working for, you know, for the youth choir. And the choir didn't really get much better, but it was definitely easier to handle after that.
I guess once you realized that you were in good company.
And I was in training.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? That's it.
So, maybe I'm still in training. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, we will. I mean, that's that's the amazing thing about when you're working with God. And I love the story of Moses. And one of the big things that I feel, and I guess a lot of people can resonate with this in different ways, but you know, as you go through your life, and sometimes when I think to myself, why haven't I accomplished this yet? Or why hasn't, you know, God allowed this to happen in my life? The story of Moses is one that comes back to me regularly, because I think, well, he didn't even get started really until he was 80. you know, like he spent the first 40 years in Egypt, he spent the next 40 years in the desert, and
right,
from then on did God actually say, okay, this is what I prepared you for, you know.
Right.
And so it's but yeah, it's a really good reminder, and that is yeah, that is really good to hear. So from you know, just to think a little bit more about your experience with that, when did you get to the place where you said, you know what, maybe I can actually do this, maybe I can be a gospel singer songwriter and start traveling and doing what you're doing now? What how did that transition happen from being a music teacher to saying, yep, I'm gonna go and do this?
Well, that also was a very slow process, because I had preconceived ideas about how things would go, and I just wasn't moving unless things would happen the way I thought they should. So, you know, I had done some demos of songs that I had written, and I had shared them with a friend, and that friend said to me, man, Neville, you should release this like this. You should just release this as an album. And I said, no, I can't do that. I mean, these are just demos. And he was like, no, man, this is good stuff. So, you know, I loaned it to him, and he picked some of the songs out of it, the 12 best songs, and he organized them on a CD. And back in, I think this was like early 2000s, there was something called mp3.com.
Yeah, I remember that.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he put it up on mp3.com. He found a picture and made it the artwork and just did all the whole nine for me.
Yeah.
And so it was up there. And once it was up there, you know, it was like, well, I began to say, well, I guess if he took it that far, I might as well take it further.
Mm.
And so I sang at a Vespers program, an evening program at a church. And then I kept getting invited to do more. And that's kind of how it started happening. It just sort of started taking off, I guess. And then so I took the music off of mp3.com and actually printed a CD. And then about maybe a year or two later, I met someone who helped me get on 3ABN and different things like that. And it just started taking off from there.
Yeah, and now you're sitting here fourth time in Australia and traveling playing music over here. It's just amazing to see. And I'm just curious, what sort of time frame from when, like, so you said, so that was like early 2000s, was it? When like your music was first put on mp3.com as an example?
Yeah, I think it was either 99 or 2000, one of them.
Yeah, okay.
Somewhere around there.
So yeah, so you've been, like, assuming that as a start point, you've been doing this for almost 20 years now.
Wow, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
A long time.
Yeah, but and that's amazing. And, you know, obviously, like you're saying, there's a lot of impact that's happened. And obviously also a lot of impact that you don't even know about, that'll be a lot of fun to hear about on the other side, right?
Oh, definitely. I'm looking forward to that.
So I also want to recognize, and we'll start wrapping up in a minute, but I also want to recognize the fact that people are multifaceted. The fact that music is what you're most known for doesn't mean that is everything. So what are you passionate about outside of music?
Well, I like studying the Bible. I like to consider myself to be a little bit of a Bible nerd. I also like history. Church history too is kind of interesting to me. I like following politics. I don't necessarily take a side. You know, I just like to, politics is interesting to me because it brings out I would say probably the worst part of human nature. And it sort of shows what people are willing to do to advance.
So
I heard it said once that politics is interesting because it's almost set up to fail, because the men that are of the kind of character and intelligence that should be leading the country don't want to. So what does that say about the ones that are doing
it? Yeah. I find it really fascinating to just follow, you know, how people respond to politics, you know, one side of the spectrum. They'll say that something is reprehensible, and then when somebody on that side, you know, does the same thing, they'll find a reason to justify it.
Yeah,
you
know? I did it because of this. Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Or they'll say, well, oh, you know, the person on the other side, if he had done it, you know, the response would have been different. Therefore, it's okay, you know, for me to do it. You know, so I don't know. I just, I find following politics is a very interesting way to study human nature.
Yeah.
And a lot could be said about that for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And you're saying you like history as well. So what, any particular phase of history or facet?
Just history in general. I
the deeper you get in, the more fascinating it becomes.
Yeah, well, one of the things I've learned about history is that generally what people are told or what we tend to accept as true, that there's a whole lot more to it than we are being told.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That there's a whole lot more layers underneath the surface. Another thing that's I find interesting is that, you know, if there are disagreements, the person who wins the war tends to be the one who gets to tell the story.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
So everything is through the filter of that.
Of that, yeah. Right, right. Mm. And I think that, you know, we need to be able to look at it from other perspectives. I mean, case in point, when North America was settled, for instance, most of that story we hear through the settlers, we don't really see it from the Native American perspective that much. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure.
That's kind of like what I'm talking about.
Any war story is generally the same way, right? Like, I mean, you can read a lot about World War II, but it's always from the Allied perspective. You very rarely hear a history from Germany or Japan's perspective.
So, right.
No, that's very interesting. So, as we do start to wrap up, is there any, like, from your experience, is there any advice that you would give if there's a young person listening to this and they're saying, you know, God's given me this gift of music and I don't want to go and use it for my own glory. I want to use it for him. What would be some advice that you would give to them?
I would say to just start where you are and be determined to always do what God is leading you to do. And you're going to end up where you need to be, you know, because it's kind of difficult sometimes to know how to strategize, you know, because if you want to do it God's way, sometimes the strategies that are out there that we could use are not godly strategies. So, you know, I would say to, you know, keep your ears and eyes open to be able to discern what God would have you to do and keep developing your craft and start sharing it where you are and see how God opens the doors. And if he opens the door, then you need to walk through it. And if he closes the door, then perhaps you need to wait or go in another direction.
Yeah, thank you. So just finally, if anyone that's listening, they want to find out more about you or lend their support or get your music, how do they do that? How do they find you generally?
Well, my website is NevillePeter.com. That's NevillePeter.com. No S on the end of Peter. And I also am on Facebook. I have CDs that I sell through my website. I have 7 titles right now. I just released an album called By the Word, and it's all scripture songs, scriptures that I put to music that was done with orchestra and pianos, and it's really I really like it. It's not something that I normally do. It was something that sort of fell in my lap, like the Lord gave it to me. And so I've released that now, and that's available for sale on my website as well. And I'm also working on a streaming service, because music is moving in that direction where people are streaming it. So I have not put my music out there on the streaming services. I guess we should have talked about that, but since there's no time, I'll just say that I'm starting one of my own.
That's okay. I was gonna say we can add a little bit of time. No, I mean, the people that are listening, if they really have to go and get lunch, they can press pause and come back if you want to talk about it.
Oh. Well, the long and short of it is that the value of music is dropping, and it's honestly because of streaming.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is that now people don't really have an incentive to purchase music anymore, because they can get it for free on Spotify, Apple Play, Pandora, YouTube. It's just, you know, but the interesting thing about it is that music is still very expensive to produce. So it's extremely expensive to produce, but you can buy it for next to nothing. And that's creating quite a problem for not only independent artists like myself, but mainstream artists too. The solution for the mainstream artists, though, is that they can still make quite a bit of money through touring. But if you're an independent artist and you have a small niche market like I do, it's not that simple. So it becomes more challenging. So what I've decided to do is to start a streaming service of my own where people who love my music can support my music for a small subscription fee. So that's the other thing that I'm working on. I am delivering the music through email, but I'm hoping one day I can create a mobile app that will enable people to actually have access to all of my music from their smartphones for a small subscription fee. Apps like that, though, cost a lot of money to develop. So I'm in the process right now of raising the money to develop that app. So
okay, great. So yeah, if anyone is keen to support that, they can do that on your website. Is that all the details are there?
All right.
Well, Neville, thank you so much for being so generous with your time. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. It was a real blessing.
And that's the end of another episode. Just before I head off, I want to encourage you to go over to our page on Facebook and also our account on Instagram and follow us there, because that is where we interact with our listeners, and we would love for you to enter in and join the conversation. Also, while you're signing up, I would also recommend signing up to our mailing list on our website, oztabletalk.com.au. If you do that, you will receive our exclusive content, because occasionally we do release exclusives and they only go out to our mailing list. So I would strongly recommend you go and sign up for that. If you have a few more minutes to be one of the most amazing listeners on the planet, you can go over to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review, because reviews help us to grow and they help other people to find us. So if you want to help us reach those goals, please jump in and give us a review. The final message that I'd like to leave you with is to let you know about our Patreon account. Now, Patreon is a way for creators to get paid for creating, and ultimately what we do does cost money to get us hosted and have the services that we need to run the podcast. And so if you'd like to help us do that, jump over onto patreon.com/oztabletalk, and you can give anything from even a dollar a month upwards, but at different levels there are different benefits, different rewards that we want to give you, just to say thank you for being an amazing supporter of ours. If you can't afford that, we would just gratefully accept your prayers, because that is what our ministry runs on. And so with that, I will leave you to your day, and thank you so much for listening to this episode. We look forward to seeing you guys next week.